open transactions, unshipped orders, unprocessed production orders, unreceived purchase orders, those you load because those are transactions that have yet to be fully executed. But if you've got orders that have shipped and billed and they're basically history, in my experience, we would either keep the legacy systems alive for reference for a year or two.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Garbage in, garbage out is perhaps the most overused phrase of all during the ERP conversations. Everyone uses it, but very few understand consequences and implications of this phrase. Also, your data, whether structured poorly or diligently, forms the foundation of your business model. But why? Because many data sets are relevant in the ERP conversations, such as master, configuration, transactional, and historical. They each have their implications on the selection and implementation of ERP. Suppose you implement or select an ERP without going through the phase of data cleansing or aligning your data with the future business model. In that case, you might end up choosing an incorrect ERP as your poorly structured data may be influencing the decision for your ERP. The data cleansing could mean aligning your BOMs with your production process or your customer structure with how you transact with them. But how to follow the structured data cleansing process to select the suitable ERP and avoid implementation disaster? In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn, who brings significant expertise to discuss data cleansing prior to ERP implementation. We covered many grounds, including the difference between what garbage truly is during the implementation and why ERP historical data is hard to migrate compared to CRM. Finally, we discussed the business model implications of bad data and how the master data needs to be planned in different contexts in the multi-system scenario. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. And today we have a very special topic that is going to be everybody's favorite, especially in the ERP community. Everybody sort of likes to talk about garbage in, garbage out, but I don't know how many people really understand the implications of data cleansing and how that is going to drive your business model, as well as what kind of implications you are going to have on your ERP selection and implementation. So we have some very exciting panelists. We are going to have a lot of stories, but before we get there, we are going to start with everybody's intros. Chris, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Chris Garradini. I'm the founder and owner of Turnkey Technologies. We've been implementing Microsoft Dynamics ERP solutions for 27 years. And believe it or not, the first 18 or so years, I did all the data conversions. So great topic today.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chris, for being here. I'm pretty sure you are going to have a lot of stories, and I'm really interested in digging into those. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, Andy, I'm going to move to you next. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Andy Pratico, and I've been in the ERP business specifically for manufacturers for 40 years. I've worked all over North America, about two-thirds of the U.S. states. I lived in the U.S. for 10 years. I live in Vancouver, Canada. I've written a book on how to evaluate and how to uncover the truth about ERP software, and I do webinars that I teach people because it's evaluating ERP software is very difficult, almost as difficult as electronic data conversions.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Andy. And you have seen all the good, bad, and ugly of the ERP implementation. So your stories are going to be super beneficial for today's show. Thank you so much for being here. All right. I'm actually going to move to Tom next. Tom, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, Sam. Thank you. And welcome to the other guests. Good to see some of you again, familiar faces. My name is Tom Rodden. I am CIO at Varian Medical Systems, and I have been in that position for the last 4 years, so overseeing some major implementations and the corresponding data conversions in those cases, Salesforce, SAP, and others. Prior to being CIO, I was running the application space at Varian for about 9 years, so also experiencing the challenges, the joys, and the challenges of data conversion in those projects. And then for the 10 years prior to that, I was a consultant at Pricewaterhouse and Deloitte, focused on ERP implementations. Again, where data conversion could be the bane of your existence. So lots of war stories, and happy to be here and share and learn.
Okay, amazing. And it's always a pleasure to have you, Tom. I find you super deep, super insightful with your stories. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sam.
All right, Jill, joining for the first time. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. And happy to be here with all of these experts. So similar to Tom, spent 20 years in the corporate world with a lot of different ERP implementations, transformations, conversions. Spent my career in strategic sourcing around the world, supporting single instance implementations, and then Lean Six Sigma, and then data governance. So I'm a firm believer in the power of cleansing and getting it right at the point of entry. So look forward to this lively conversation.
Okay, amazing. And it's going to be so powerful to dig into all of those stories. I'm super curious to hear all of them. Thank you so much for being here, Jill.
Damn.
All right, guys. So we are going to set the stage a bit overall in terms of the today's topic. So our, you know, obviously data conversion could mean a lot of different things. For today, what we are really talking about is data cleansing and how that is going to drive your business model, ERP selection, ERP implementation. For example, let's say if you have been running your business model utilizing your old data, what is going to happen? Your BOMs are going to be probably not aligned to how ERP systems may have evolved over the period of time. Your items may not be structured the way you really wanted. Maybe your business model has changed, but your data is still old. And that could have a lot of implication, even if you actually get the newer ERP system, because you did not really align with, number one, with your changed business model, and you did not align with the new ERP system that you are buying. So repurposing that data or reorganizing your data, whether you talk about the customer hierarchies, whether you talk about the vendor hierarchies, whether you talk about the item master, whether you talk about the BOMs, those are going to be super critical. So I'm actually going to ask for these stories, guys. Okay. So when we talk about the term garbage in, garbage out, and I'm going to be using a lot of garbage today because that's super important for ERP. And I'm going to be super polite there, by the way. Okay. So, Chris, I'm actually going to ask you to define in the form of a story, pick a story where you have seen an ERP implementation, define what was the garbage in and what was the garbage out. So sure. If you want to pick a story or a couple of story, define the garbage. What was that?
So I've got a good story, Sam, and it's going to surround, I think inventory is really the topic. And what this particular customer was challenged with was, again, new system, new implementation, new ideas, new configuration, and old data, old values, transforming it so that it fits and matches the new schema. And again, I get the critical failure was just them taking the data from the old system, transforming it, and then ensuring there was what's called referential integrity before they injected it. So there's different approaches to doing data conversion. Some systems force you to go through the business logic, which means It'll reject things that don't have that integrity. But in their context, they jam this data directly into the tables, you know, and 1,000 items and 1,400 sites and maybe 1,500 location records. So they ended up with records, orphaned child records compared to master records. Another part of it is these unit of measure conversion schedules that kind of tell you there's 10 eaches in a case. Well, when you load the quantity of that item in cases, if that conversion's the wrong schedule, it thinks it has billions of eaches. So what they ended up with was, again, a lot of fragmented orphan data. And then the integrity, really, there was 1 million in inventory here. They ended up with 10 million over here. So obviously, they couldn't reconcile, couldn't validate. So the intermediate transformation reconciliation, really an imperative. And it's a really difficult situation for these people to clean up based on how many unit of measure schedules they propagated. So that's a tough story and a lot of effort to do cleanup even after the fact.
Okay, so a great story there, but I'm probably going to use a little bit of translation there. So let's say, you know, that's a great technical explanation, but I don't know if my CFO listeners are able to follow along. Okay, so can you talk more from the business perspective? What was the garbage? Okay, I know that this is a technical problem, but what was the implication from the business perspective? What was the scenario that they would have missed? More from the use case perspective, what were the financial implications because of this? Not in the ERP implementation itself, but overall in meeting the business goals.
Sure, and I think the real crux of the accuracy issue really came with inventory unit of the conversions, where they're trying to manage stock that's coming out of a legacy system and end up with the same stock values in the destination system. And because of just the weakness or the inaccuracies in translations, they ended up with financial values that were distorted. They were wrong. And so, of course, the response to that is you have to go out there and count your inventory and figure out what do we really have, because they couldn't figure out really what the answer was on either side. So it was really compromising from a financial standpoint. Impacted customer service. Again, they couldn't fulfill orders because they thought they had stock. They didn't have stock. They weren't ordering what they needed. So, again, the ripple effect of the inaccuracies. And they moved ahead thinking that they had good data.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that, Chris. So I'm actually going to move to Tom next. So, Tom, you are actually going to have the same question. It's going to be a story related to garbage in, garbage out. And I'll tell you some of the scenarios so that you guys understand, you know, the kind of stories I'm looking for. For example, let's say I have seen a lot of ERP implementations myself. Let's say if you look at some of the systems from 80s, 90s, they didn't have the routing as part of your BOM. And when you don't have routing, you know what is going to happen. You have to take a lot of shortcuts. What you have to do is you have to create each order for each of these steps in the manufacturing process, so that these job orders are not really going to be connected. The costing is not going to be centralized. You are going to get tons and tons and tons of issues. So now, let's say if you say that, you know what, my manufacturing process is different because I have each order for each step of the manufacturing process. You as a business owner is defining yourself as unique, that I am very unique and I need an ERP system that is going to be designed the way I have my manufacturing process. But these manufacturing processes could be the limitation of the existing legacy system that you might be using. So now that becomes your business process, even though that is a shortcoming. Okay, and that is not, you have not really updated your data and you have not really aligned your system. So can you talk about similar story where you have seen, let's say if they were the more of the process manufacturer, they utilize a discrete system, it was a nightmare, but they are still working the same way, even if they have migrated, let's say, three different ERP systems. So over to you, Tom, a story, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, I have a vivid story, vivid in my memory, at least, Sam. It's related to ERP and CRM. So some years ago, 8 years ago or so now, at Varian, where we were implementing a new CRM, and we were talking about customer master data. And we said, we need to pull the data from the legacy systems and convert it into the new CRM solution. And there were a couple of different kinds of serious data quality problems. Yep. That were data cleansing challenges. One was that simply the data wasn't complete. So incompleteness may be a problem in many ways. It may even make it impossible to load the data into the new system where the data structures are a little different. There are different requirements, and you may actually have to take an extract from your old system, your legacy system, and actually add more data to it before you can load it into the new target system. So that's one area that was problematic for us. where the new system, the new CRM, was demanding more information than the old system had in it. So that's one. Second problem was that some of the data that was present in the old system was not of a good quality. So missing data is one thing, poor quality is another. There may have been invalid zip codes. There may have been just inaccurate addresses. There may have been various types of inaccuracies. And we would be extracting the data, loading it into the new system. And again, maybe there are some zip code check rules, for example, where things were getting kicked out. This can't be loaded. The zip code doesn't even exist, or it doesn't exist in this state. And so we were doing data cleansing again on data quality. And then the third type of issue that we ran into was that there wasn't just one source system. So the ERP was a source system, but there were also several other smaller proto CRM systems that Varian had that they were obsoleting in this process. And so they were collecting data from all of these different systems and loading it into the new single CRM of the future. And in that process, there were conflicts. So we had a third issue, right? We had missing data, we had poor data quality. Now we had conflicts where the same customer was being loaded from two systems and the data was not exactly the same. Names were different, of accounts, addresses were different, all kinds of data was different. So that had to be reconciled. And then we had the fourth problem, which was we didn't even see, like there was no actual conflict. The data was so different that it created unwittingly duplicates. And now we had to dedupe, as people would like to say, dedupe the duplicates, get rid of the duplicates. But the challenge there, first of all, is identifying that they're duplicates. And so that was a whole nother data cleansing exercise. So I'd say we had those four issues just to get the customer master data correctly and completely loaded. And so that took many months, many repeated extracts, cleansing efforts, loading efforts by multiple people that understood these different source systems and could actually wrestle this to the ground. So that was a big deal back then. As you're loading the CRM system, you know, standing that up, what is CRM? It's the customer master system, right? So you got to get the customer stuff right.
Yeah. So amazing story there, by the way. Obviously, you know, in the customer master, you are going to have tons and tons of challenges. But in my experience, when you compare the CRM data versus the ERP data, we are looking at 20x complexity based on the referential integrity. I'm actually going to use, Chris's term there, of the data. Because here, in case of your CRM, you are really talking about maybe customer locations. Maybe you are talking about what else is there in case of customer? Maybe.
Well, you're talking about install base. You're talking about contacts of customers. You're talking about hierarchical relationships between the different types of accounts. You know, there's the bill to, there's the ship to. So there is more complexity there maybe than some people might think, Sam. But I'm not arguing that product master might even be more complex. I think that's probably true.
But in case of ERP, you are obviously going to have all of this complexity because it's going to have your customer data, it's going to have your item data, it's going to have your warehouses, but you are going to have another level of hierarchy because you have to worry about your financial periods. You have to worry about your financial calendars because all of those business rules are actually going to be kicked off when you are going to be processing your transactions in case of your ERP. So items are going to have correlation with your warehouse. So it just the amount of complexity that you have inside your ERP data is going to be 20-fold compared to your CRM data. So I don't know if you have any other ERP-related stories where you had to transfer this data to your another ERP instance. Otherwise, I can move to maybe Andy. He might be able to share a story there.
Well, I'd give Andy some airtime. I've already taken up quite a bit of time. I'll think about that, Sam.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Tom. Andy, so do you have any specific story that you might be able to share? Let's say a manufacturer did not really have as much manufacturing experience. Their data integrity wasn't as good as they are supposed to be in the real ERP system, depending upon how you implement it. Because if you don't implement it right, you are going to get tons and tons of scheduling challenges, in my opinion. Tons and tons of costing challenges if you don't structure your data the way it is supposed to be structured.
Yeah, well, first off, to answer your initial question, Sam, is that you asked me if there are sometimes companies have data from their current systems that might not be accurate, and therefore data cleansing is required before you bring it into the new system. My answer is not sometimes, it's every time. Okay, it's not a rare, I mean, everyone's got bad data in their current systems. Either it's from obsolete part numbers, obsolete customers, obsolete vendors. These things are continually evolving and changing. Maybe even the same customer, wrong address. There's all kinds of things that are dynamic within your databases. And so the first thing that we have to do is analyze what is the accuracy and how clean is the current data. And then if it's not, the first thing is to clean it, is to cleanse it, as you're talking about. Now, the story I'll tell you about is kind of an embarrassing one. Yep. Because I gained a new customer once and had our team, you know, work on the implementation plan. And the very first step on these implementation plans is to review the current data, see how clean it is, work on increasing the accuracy, and then mapping to the new system so that you can do the data conversion. Well, I found out 2 weeks after we installed the software that my IT person that was supposed to do the data conversion did the mapping, but he didn't test it. So if you think about what happened there, the customer got the data. They thought it was clean. They thought it was real, and it was a disaster. So in regards to setting up that data cleansing exercise or data conversion exercise, yes, you have to first step and make, you know, review their current data. And some of the fields that Tom and Chris were talking about are exactly what I'm talking about. Unit of measures. There's tons of fields you have to go through. But then it's the mapping to the new system, because the old fields are never identical as the new fields. So you have to map it out as best you can. But then before you do it, you have to test it and make sure it's accurate, because if you don't, you're going to have a real problem.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that insight, Andy. Jill, I'm actually going to move to you. So let's say if you were to define, you know, the garbage in, garbage out, in a story, what have you seen in your experience? What was the garbage in? What was the garbage out? And I'm looking for the implications on the business model and the business process.
Yeah, so I think similar to what we've heard here, you know, you've got to set your requirements and define what good looks like. So many people don't just step back and do those basic steps. Lean Six Sigma, you know, name your process improvement methodology, but define what that source of truth is, cleanse and enrich that data, map it, test it, you know, as we just heard, is highly critical. It's important to set that governance criteria. So the scenario I'm thinking of, I think of the supply chain as a value chain. And there are stories all along the way, whether it's your inventory, your BOM, your quality, you know, your parts, your raw materials, your spend data, your customer inventory, you know, spend on contract, how am I rebating, how am I pricing, all of that drives compliance, and all of that links to margins. So ultimately, if you're not maximizing your margins, you're driving your business into the ground. So for me, that's the end game. Being in the corporate world, having been an entrepreneur, you have to have that end game. And I have seen implementations fail as a result of everything we've just heard. And you've got to do those basic steps in mapping and cleansing and enriching. And you've got to have the governance around every single field. And people say, well, oh, the PO line item doesn't matter. And, you know, you see services. Well, what the hell does that mean? You know, what am I getting for that? How do I tie that actually to a contract? Are you requiring line item detail? So, you know, getting into all of the nitty gritty detail, nobody wants to do the hard work, but it takes the hard work to get the results and, you know, to drive that productivity, the efficiency and the compliance in your business.
Okay, amazing. So I'm actually going to have a clarifying question for you, obviously, yeah, in terms of setting the framework for governance. And a lot of small to medium sized businesses, they might be wondering, okay, what is governance? I mean, they probably mm-hmm. don't know. They probably don't have a framework for it. Obviously, mm-hmm. we all know in the ERP community that if you don't have governance, you're going to get tons and tons and tons of issues. Okay, because mm-hmm. you know, if people don't know what kind of data they need to set up and what is going to be implication, let's say if they don't clearly understand the implications of that, obviously then you are going to get tons and tons of issues. So in your experience, let's say if you were to set up the governance framework, mm-hmm. describe an example of how that would look like. So you mentioned that, you know, PO line probably is going to be important. Mm-hmm. But let's say, you know, if I'm living the day in the life scenario, for example, mm-hmm. let's say I'm the ERP admin and I have my procurement person who is looking for a specific data set for their day job. So how would that interaction look like from the governance perspective?
Yeah, so, you know, think of governance as rules, as a specification. You know, if you're building or remodeling your house, how do you want that data to look at the end of the day? And don't accept anything less than that is how I would, you know, define it in lay terms. So on POs or supplier spend data, ensure that you have that level of detail that you need to measure contract compliance. On the customer side, again, is the pricing accurate for every piece of inventory going out the door? Am I rebating appropriately? And I am a big advocate of seeing everything across the value chain because in my experience, where ERP implementations can really fail, so we heard some CRM examples, is sometimes your largest customers are also your largest suppliers. And if you're not connecting those dots, you're either giving it away on the buy side or the sell side. So you need that line of sight across the entire value chain to ensure that you're not discounting or rebating, you know, your product too much, or you're not negotiating away value on the other side. So those are a few examples. And then, you know, in a perfect world, right, we don't live in a perfect world, but you would see those analytics, okay, with XYZ, hey, this is what we're selling, this is what we're spending, here's the compliance, you know, to the customer side and to the supply side of the business. And then you can look at how is that impacting my margins? How's that impacting my efficiency? What's the quality look like? So all of those elements, I would say, are critical. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you so much for that. And by the way, I love one of the examples, but follow-up question I'm actually going to have for Chris on that. So the example that you brought in was really, really, really critical overall. From the data integrity perspective and alignment of different systems when you are, let's say, trying to advance your processes. So one of the examples that you mentioned is largest customer being your largest supplier. Mm-hmm. So if you look at some of the older systems, they did not really have that common object where you could have a customer who could be supplier, who could also be employee. The reason why older systems don't have this functionality is because in 1980s, we didn't have those problems. Our businesses were not as complicated. But today in 2021, our businesses mm-hmm. have advanced significantly. Maybe it was there, but I mean, maybe you could live, you know, you didn't have as many discount complications. But today you really need to be efficient overall in your pricing and discounting strategy. And that's why your data need to be aligned. The other example, Chris, I'm going to mention for you is, let's say if you have the migration path for people who are advancing from QuickBooks. In case of QuickBooks, they are not going to require a bank account when they are creating a customer or a vendor, okay? But if you talk about an ERP, you know, any ERP, decent size, sophisticated, integrated, you know, under the sun, all of those ERP system is going to require a bank account, and there is a fundamental reason for that, okay? So now, if you require a bank account, that requires changing your business processes. Because you cannot have a customer in your system unless you have a bank account. You can have a lead, but you can not have a customer in any ERP system, whether you talk about Microsoft, SAP. Most integrated ERP systems are going to have that constraint. So when you are switching from your QuickBooks to your, let's say, any of the ERP system, you are going to have to make that change in your business processes. And there is going to be a migration path. There is going to be a change path. That's going to have impact on your business model, the way you actually perform your business. So now, considering this example, do you have any similar stories that you have seen in case of the data integrity that you had in 1980s versus what you have in 2021?
You asking me that because I've been doing this for 40 something years anyway. And I think the techniques of converting data have changed to support some of this better, Sam. To that point, is there's a lot of direct table integrations in the past. And the problem is, as was pointed out by, you know, is things got missed, right? Oh, I didn't know I had to fill that field in, and it looked good, but it didn't perform well. So in that context, you think about the bank accounts and, okay, the customer master is missing some fields. Great. To that point, is your worksheet, your template to load the system? It's got, hey, you got to fill in columns A, B, and C to finish the conversion process. Or do you have system defaults where when you land a customer, it fills in the blanks automatically for you as like a default for every customer? So there are some techniques to supplement the data, but your point is very valid, is, you know, and again, I guess the context I was going after, another story of garbage in, garbage out, is related to being overambitious about conversion. People think in their head that, hey, everything's going to be there. Okay, let's not try to get everything over there, because a lot of times you are bringing a lot of garbage and you can't cleanse everything. And a perfect example is, I want to bring in every invoice and every payment that I've ever processed for a customer. We don't do that, because a lot of systems today, you have to bring it in from the front door and post those transactions. Becomes a reconciliation nightmare. So the garbage in, garbage out, and that's a perfect example. People are overambitious about bringing data and they can create a different kind of problem. So just a little different example.
Yeah, so I think you bring a very important point, and that is the other topic that I really wanted to cover as part of this conversation, is going to be the different data types that we have. And obviously the master data is going to have different implications on your business process than you of your transactional data. So in case of ERP, and again, these things apply for CRM as well, but the impact is not going to be as much as you are going to have, just because the data hierarchy is far more complex in case of ERP. So when you talk about different data types, and the question is really going to be for Tom. Tom, when we look at different data types, for example, let's say if you have the master data, you have the transactional data, you have the historical data, and they all are going to have different implications on your business processes and your business model. So the consultant who's working on the project, they need to sort of, you know, segment this. Okay, if it is master data, that's probably going to be your building block, how your business processes are going to perform. So that's going to go through another type of scrutiny than your transactional, than your historical data. So in your experience, how would you approach this? Let's say if you are bringing master data, transactional data, historical data, and, you know, what are the business implications that you have seen because of the data integrity in these three different data types?
Well, so the experience that you asked me, or I said I would think about, I think has relevance here, as you didn't like my CRM example too much. So I've got a bit more of a manufacturing ERP thought here. So when it comes to these three data types that you refer to, master data, transactional data, and historical data, and historical can be historical transactional data typically. Yeah. The thing that I find interesting that we haven't talked about yet, and you forced me to ponder, was this referential issue. Yeah. So, and I thought back to the days when we were doing the loads of finished goods product master data and component level product master data. And we were getting, 99% success on our loads. And let's just say it was not only just successful, but it was accurate, because those can be two different things. And then we said, okay, now we're going to load the BOMs and the routings. And we got to, 90% accuracy or success, because 1% of missing components and missing finished goods kind of had a cascading and growing impact on the dependent loads. And then we said, now we're going to load, the transactional data, the production orders, and with only 99% of finished goods and 99% of components successfully loaded, and 90% of BOMs and 90% of routings, we were down at like 50 or 60% of production orders being successfully loaded. So there is this dependency that really starts to have a massive impact if you are not rock solid and at 100% success with those foundational elements. So as you go through the layers in an ERP data conversion program, that is an issue, big issue. So when it comes to the historical data, in my experience, what I heard, at least the way I interpreted what Chris was saying, was you basically don't go there.
Yep.
Generally speaking, open transactions, unshipped orders, unprocessed production orders, unreceived purchase orders, those you load because those are transactions that have yet to be fully executed. But if you've got orders that have shipped and billed and they're basically history, in my experience, we would either keep the legacy systems alive for reference for a year or two, or we take that historical data and load it into some kind of data warehouse or data store and just say, that's where you'll go if you need to go back beyond go live date for history. You're not going to load the history into the new system. And so those are a couple of my thoughts, Sam.
Yeah, amazing. So I'm actually going to have a question for you, and you actually bring a very interesting example related to these historical data. And typically, this is the question I get from, let's say, the CFOs who have never sort of worked in the database programming, or they don't understand the world of databases. And for them, it's always a question, why is it so hard to bring that historical data in case of an ERP when you can bring everything else? In some industries, okay, in, let's say, if you talk about the pharma industry or in your industry as well, medical device, I don't know if you have the audit requirement for, let's say, 3 years, 7 years, obviously that data conversion process is going to be a nightmare overall from the effort perspective if you actually try to bring that historical data. So now, if I were to ask you the same question that my CFOs ask me, okay, why is it so hard to bring that historical data in case of an ERP when my CRM guys can bring everything? You talk about the contact, talk about whatever you need the interaction.
Again, that's master data. If you're talking about customer, or you're talking about contacts, or you're talking even about installed base, or you're talking about all these CRM type of things, that's one and done. I mean, there are some dependencies between these things, but it's not the same as, okay, I have a fully transacted sales order. I had the quote, I converted it to a sales order, I created the delivery note, I executed the shipment, I created the invoice, I received the payment, and I've done end-to-end transactional processing. I mean, if you actually try to do that end-to-end, load all that historical data, you are going to run into a hurdles at every step of that process. I mean, is it conceivable? Is it possible? Of course it's possible. Could you avoid some of the issues that Chris brought up? Like, oh, well, you're going to be generating financial transactions in the current period with historical data that wasn't in the current period. So now you're going to have to like open up new periods, old periods in your system to try and transact in these old periods. I mean, it gets very ugly and very complex. I mean, it's hard enough to just create the purchase order or the production order, the first step in the series of transactions that might take place before you get end to end. That's hard enough without saying I'm going to do all the other ones and I've got to mirror them exactly the way they happened in the legacy system. I think that's a huge, huge workload that adds almost no value when you can access that data either through a conversion into a data warehouse or just for a period of time keeping the legacy system alive for reference read only.
Amazing. So I'm actually going to have a follow-up comment, and I'm going to have that follow-up comment for Andy. Maybe he can clarify, some things there. So CRM versus ERP is a beautiful argument. Everybody loves to talk about that because CRM is super, super, super pretty, and ERP is not. I mean, ERP is always the most hated element in any organization. So now when we talk about the bringing the historical data, Andy, and obviously you have been doing this for 40 years. So when we talk about bringing the historical data from CRM, okay, it's always going to be easier to bring historical data from CRM. If you dial any number of any CRM companies, they are going to claim that I really know what I'm talking about. I can bring my CRM data. What do you need? You need the historical interactions. You need the historical, communication. I can bring all of that. And then you dial the ERP guy and they are going to say, you know what? I cannot do this. I just cannot do this. So Andy, why is that? Why is that so hard?
Well, commonly the CRM information is not transactional. Commonly it's information tracking prospective customers, follow-up dates, triggers for the salespeople, the customer service people. The actual order entry transaction or the quoting transaction usually happens in the ERP. So that's where you're going to have your dynamic data. versus in CRM, it's commonly pretty static, excepting for adding additional notes and fields.
Okay, so very interesting comment there. Just one quick clarification. I think the CRM data is equally transactional as well, because that is slightly more relationship-centric. But the depth of hierarchy that you are going to get, so Chris, I'm actually going to come to you. You have a comment. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think Andy's right. I mean, imagine bringing in all those sales orders historically. You'd have to have stock balances to support that. So you end up having to support all this historical garbage to bring it in. We don't do business with that customer. Oh, they got to be in there. We don't have that item anymore. It's got to be in there. That rep is gone. He's got to be in there. You got to have all this. So you really have a lot of prep to do that. And it's just not worth it to that point. Sales history, data warehouse. Tom got that one right. So
okay, amazing. Thank you so much.
Finally, I got something right. Okay. Right, thank you.
Okay, Jill, on to you. So what has been your experience overall bringing the historical information? Do you have any other stories that you might be able to share with respect to the different data types that are relevant in different software? Whether you are talking about ERP or P2P or CRM, they all have different data types. The master data is going to have different depth of complexity, then your transactional data, then your historical data. So what has been your experience in this specific case?
Yeah, you know, they're all interrelated. So the P2P is a subset of the ERP. And as Andy just said, the inventory management sales orders are a subset of the ERP data. I am a firm believer of getting that master data right, because ultimately, you know, it's a trickle down effect. If that is not correct and you don't have hierarchy in place, you know, let's say you're a large industrial manufacturer, a large pharmaceutical, whatever the case may be, if you've got IBM in your system or PwC in your system 100 different times, you will never be able to manage your category spend or manage that supplier. That supplier will be managing you and killing you for the next 20 years. So I'm a big advocate of having that hierarchy in place so you can manage your suppliers and you can manage your customers versus them managing you. And that is a big key. And then that impacts your transactional data and then that historical data. And you can report correctly. You can then manage that inventory, the quality, you know, spend on contract. Everything links to that master data.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that insight. And, you know, Chris, I'm actually going to have a follow-up comment for you. And that is related to one of the comments that we have from the audience as well. In case of data, the perspective matters a lot as well, in my experience. Okay, so when you are going to look at the ERP data in isolation, you might be okay. But let's say if you are trying to integrate, let's say, the e-commerce system to an ERP, your perspective is going to change. Your customer master may not be the same as how your ERP is going to consider the customer master. I'll give you an example. You know, everybody understand HubSpot. Everybody sort of recognize HubSpot because that is one of the most prevalent marketing automation system that is being used at this point of time. It is really designed for B2C. It's not designed for B2B. If you look at their customer hierarchy, you are not going to get the same depth that in your customer hierarchy that you are going to have, let's say, in a B2B system. In a B2B system, you are going to have all of that. What Jill was mentioning, that you have the customer who could also be supplier, you have the parent accounts. Sometimes you might be billing your parent account, but maybe supplying to your child account. Then you have a bunch of locations that might be there. Now, HubSpot is not going to have all of that. But let's say if you are trying to utilize HubSpot as your CRM, and maybe you have an e-commerce front as well, and then you have a bunch of ADIs. Okay, so now this is an e-commerce company. Now your ERP needs to sit in the middle. So now when you look at from the overarching perspective, your customer master need to be aligned with all of these systems so that your retail works, so that your distribution works, so that your manufacturing works. Okay, so Chris, let's say if you were to describe this problem in the form of stories in considering different perspectives, okay, in aligning different systems, have you seen any sort of issues with respect to the alignment of data, alignment of customer masters, alignment of vendor masters when we are talking about communication of P2P with ERP?
Absolutely. And I think you nailed it. There's a B2B and a B2C, and there's different scenarios on how you implement each. Meaning in a B2C, you may not want every single person that buys on your website in your ERP system, because you could have millions of customers that never come back again. So there's a little different architecture between B2B and B2C. But a lot of times you have differences, to your point. The Shopify's or the HubSpot's have much more robust product masters than in the ERP. So, you know, we create products here, but we have to fill in the blanks over here. And if customers come downstream from the e-commerce site, again, are we filling in blanks over here? I've seen scenarios in the B2C where they have one customer per state for sales tax, and they keep all the detail in the e-com site. So there are some complexities there as you look at how do you pass data back and forth, and you don't want to overwhelm the ERP either. It could be another garbage scenario where, oh, I've got millions of customers, choke the ERP, and you really don't need that data there. So that's a real life situation where the customer was getting millions of orders, and we did not want all those customers in the ERP. So special processes there. B2B a little bit different, to your point.
Yeah, so I'll give you one more story, and then probably you can follow up with some of the comments as well. So I have seen some, you know, and I like to be polite, right? So some of these stories are going to be super awkward practices from the business perspective, from the accounting perspective. So I'll tell you one, okay? So when you talk about this e-commerce conversion and when you are having these custom ERP, so in this specific case, what they really had is they were doing the invoice first and sales order next. Can you believe this? Okay, this is the actual business practice. And they said our business was different. Now, this I see a lot more common in the development community, in the IT community. When, let's say, if you have a manufacturer or the retailer or the distributor, they hired really smart kid from the college, and they are going to kill the hell out of your WordPress and going to create the ERP system right inside that. Now, that becomes your business process, to be honest. Now, that became business process because you hired an intern. He did not or she did not understand how accounting works, how business works. You created the ERP. Now, you are actually going to talk to an ERP player, and then ERP company is going to say, No, this is not something I've seen. I mean, you are a crazy, unique business. So now what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to tweak the hell out of my ERP system to tweak the process that came from an intern who just didn't understand how business works. So have you seen similar practices where, let's say, if you have the really, really bad data, and the bad data is the outcome of, let's say, an unskilled worker who did not really understand how accounting works, how business works, how retail works, how manufacturing works. They simply coded just because they could. So do you have any follow-up comments there by any chance?
Sure. And what comes to mind is sales tax. You think about the complexities of creating an invoice and taking the cash and then creating an order that has to be picked, packed, and shipped, and freight calculated, and sales tax gets recalculated. And that's a perfect example where the arrogance of what they did and the formulas they used to create that were very primitive. And of course, the downstream effect was couldn't reconcile. The cash that came with that invoice matched up in the e-commerce site, but when it came downstream, the cash didn't pay off the balance of the invoice. Talk about garbage. Lots of invoices were open with penny to penny, and they call them rounding differences. But when you're bringing in thousands of transactions and none of them close out, perfect example. But sales tax was the culprit there, and it really threw off monies that everything matched up there, but you get downstream and totally out of balance.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chris. Tom, I'm actually going to move, especially around the perspectives. When we look at the perspectives matter, because when you look at purely from the ERP perspective, your customer master, your vendor master, your product master is going to be very different. But when you look at the engineering perspective, they are going to have very different perspective. When you look at the manufacturing perspective, that's going to be a very different. When you combine all of these perspectives, and you need to create a common thread that is going to serve everybody. That's where the real challenge is. So have you seen similar challenges in aligning these perspectives and creating a master data model that is going to serve all the departments and all the systems in your enterprise architecture?
Well, it's a complex question, Sam. I'd say my answer, my simple answer is yes. But a lot of the conversation and your question brought to mind for me some of the interesting arguments. I won't even call them discussions. I'll call them arguments. That's what they were about. The dependencies between different modules within some very large ERP systems and also across systems when this data was being shared, if you will. So it's one thing to talk about data conversion and data cleansing in that context. It's another to talk about interfaces. I tend to think of interfaces as almost an ongoing type of data conversion, right? So if you have an ERP system and you have a product master that you go through a process collecting the data from engineering, collecting the data from accounting, collecting the data from all the different departments in order to create your product master. Eventually, you're going to get to the point where you say, now I have to actually create that in the CRM system, for example, and you want to pass that data. And so you're doing this data conversion as part of your normal business. It's not just part of a single one-time load to stand up a new system. It's the ongoing business. And so the data does need to be clean, and you start to get into some very interesting religious debates about master and slave relationships between these systems, right? So is the customer master in the CRM system?
Yeah.
Or is the customer master starting in the ERP system? And which one feeds which? And so these were challenging debates. The data cleanliness question was a continuous one, because of course these systems are not static. They do evolve, and data gets obsoleted in one and new data is created. And how do you pass that information? And how do you keep the CRM system clean if it's dependent on the ERP? It's hard enough to keep ERP clean. And so the interface needs to account for all of that, right? And so there's a lot of data cleansing that's not just related, I'm saying, to this one-time load that people typically think of when you launch a new system. It's part of the ongoing challenge. So I don't know if that addresses a little bit of what you're talking about in terms of these interactions, but we went through an exercise when we stood up our CRM system at Varian, where we went through every single piece of data and defined, is it, what's the master and what's the slave? And how, at what point does the master feed the slave? And what happens in this scenario? What happens in this scenario, right? When we delist a product, what happens, you know, when change contact information in the CRM system? Does that impact the ERP? And so sometimes these things are even bidirectional. So it could get very complicated. And so I thought that was maybe worth sharing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Thank you so much for sharing that. Andy, I'm going to reach to you. Do you have any perspective in terms of when you try to align these different perspectives of all of different departments and these systems?
Well, if you're talking about what is the master files versus what is not, CRM, we've got two different types of CRM systems in the market: the standalone siloed CRMs or the ones that are built into ERPs. If they're built into ERPs, then there's no issue, because the fact is that the customer master is going to be the same. The CRM uses additional fields that the rest of the ERP won't use because it's not an existing customer. But, you know, in regards to which is the child or which is the master, in an integrated system, it's going to be the same. When you have separate systems, that's when you're going to have your challenges, and depending on how you're doing the integration. And if you're keeping the master separate, you're continually entering the same data twice. And of course, that's going to cause errors. So is that anywhere close to what you were hoping for me to say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Andy. And I'm actually going to ask Jill, because we are close to our time as well. So we want to make sure that we are able to address the comments. Jill, what is your experience overall when you try to align these perspectives from many different systems? And that may require a restructuring of your master data, just because you need to make sure that your P2P system is going to be talking to your ERP, and it's going to provide all the metrics that you had mentioned to make sure that your sourcing function is going to work.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I agree with what Andy said 100%. You've got to map it out, and you need to have the rules in place. And what governs? Does the invoice govern over the purchase order? And what those rules are for your business? And, you know, what's acceptable from a line item perspective? What's acceptable from a goods receipt, a three-way match? All of those things need to be clearly defined, clearly mapped, so that you don't have, you know, any room for error or internal squabble, if you will, because it will become a shouting match very easily between finance, supply chain, procurement, you name it.
Okay, love it. Thank you so much, Jill, for that. So now we can take only the closing advice. So we are going to keep it super short. Chris, what is your short closing advice?
So don't be biased when you implement the new ERP system. You know, don't let the old values and data influence you. Pick the best practices, the right configuration. So set the target and figure out how to transform your data. And when you go through that, validate it, test it, make sure it's usable.
Okay, amazing. Love it. Tom, what would be your closing advice?
I would say that achieving clean data is a process. And it is not just a one-time process. It's an ongoing process. So don't think of it as one and done. Build a process to address data cleanliness.
I definitely agree. Thank you so much, Tom, for that. Andy, what would be your closing advice?
Well, you know, everyone says that doing it when you're hearing the sales pitch anyways, everyone says that a data conversion is a piece of cake. It's not true. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of mapping. It's a lot of strategy. It's a lot of discussion. But on the back end of the data conversion, you can never do enough testing. Because once you've given that data to the customer to use and it's not right, you lose the customer's confidence and it's all over.
Okay, love it. Thank you so much, Andy, for that. Jill, what would be your closing advice?
I agree with what Chris, Tom, and Andy have said. You know, I would just add, you know, begin with the end in mind and can't reinforce enough. It's an ongoing process that, you know, cleansing enrichment needs to happen every minute of every day because as soon as you enter, you know, data or your supplier does or your customer does, it's out of date within days or weeks. So that needs to be continually managed and monitored and governed.
Amazing. Love it. Thank you so much for joining, guys. On that note, I really want to thank everybody for your time and insights.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Sam. Everybody.
Hello, everybody. Yeah. Good to see you.
Thanks, Sam.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Chris Gherardini, head over to turnkeytech.com. It's turnkeytech.com. If you want to learn more about Andy Pradigo, head over to essoft.com. It's essoft.com. If you want to learn more about Tom Rodden, head over to varian.com. It's varian.com. If you want to learn more about Jill Robbins, head over to businessfears.com. It's businessfierce.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Brian Somer, who discusses why legacy ERP systems and artificial accounting practices need to change with time. Also, the interview with Rich Said, who describes his journey and the pitfalls of implementing 6 ERP projects throughout his career. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.